Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Coronado Quarter Three Investor Call. All participants are in listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question and answer session. If you wish to ask a question, you will need to press the star key followed by the number two on your telephone keypad. I would now like to hand the conference over to Gerry Spindler, CEO of Coronado. Gerry, please go ahead.
Thank you, and thank you for attending the third quarter call for Coronado. This has been a quarter of significant achievement. We'll highlight some of those as we go through the comments, but we'll start, as we always do, with safety. The Australian total reportable incident frequency rate was 9.88. The Australian operations total reportable incident frequency rate continues to step up over the past 12 months due to wider reporting scope introduced over the past 12 months, and a number of steps have been implemented to address this trend, including a review of contractor management processes and systems, increased emphasis on safety interactions, additional personnel to focus on safety and compliance, improved investigation procedures to expand outcomes and learning. In the United States, the U.S. total reportable incident rate was 1.64, significantly below the national average. Indeed, I would like to point out the Eagle One mine, which started operation about 2 years ago, continues to operate without ever having had a single lost time accident, a remarkable achievement for an underground mine of this size. Looking at COVID, we have had no COVID cases in Queensland. We have had a small number of COVID cases in the U.S., but these cases have occurred and been detected upon screening as employees came on the property. We have a well-developed screening process, and they never entered the property, were sent for testing or quarantine, and of the cases that were confirmed, no one got inside the workplace gates. There was no community transmission and no adverse effect on production. Indeed, the health services in the locations in which we operate have praised Coronado's operating management for the diligence which they've pursued, the contact registration and procedures to prevent the spread of COVID. And I would like to express my appreciation for all of the workforce and the management for their attention to this effort. Looking at production and cost, saleable production for the September quarter was 4.6 million tons, up 31.2% on the June quarter. That was driven by a restart for the U.S. mining operations at Buchanan and Logan and very strong performance from Australia. We had record quarterly saleable production from the Curragh mine of 3.6 million tons. And that was driven by a number of programs that we expect to continue producing benefit, including enhanced recovery at the prep plant and a better operating profile and startup times at the prep plant as well. The U.S. operations ramped up production in line with the recovery in the metallurgical coal markets, although in the third quarter, only for the very last week or so did the Buchanan mine operate at full production. September quarter sales of 4.9 million tons were up 27% on the previous quarter, primarily due to higher production and improved market conditions. Curragh delivered record sales volume for the September quarter of 3.6 million tons, up 20.6% on the June quarter. Among the key operating financial stats I'll go over, for the full year, mining cost per ton sold dropped at the end of the September quarter to $56 down from 5730 at the end of June 2020. I would point out that this was in the face of a limited startup in the U.S. and a higher Australian dollar in Australia. And again, improvements like this do not come without the focused attention and intervention of operating management, and I want to laud their efforts. The group realized metallurgical coal price of $86 per ton for September was down 6.1% compared to the prior quarter. Gerhard, over to you.
Thanks, Jerry, and good day, everybody. Let me just give you some highlights here before we go into market and Q&A. And the highlights are, as Jerry mentioned, in production, revenue, and cost, and liquidity. for context, let me just repeat that our saleable production went up by more than 31% to 4.6 million tons. In that, our Australian operations, Curra had a record quarter, as Jerry said, 3.6 million tons, which was nearly 25% better than last quarter. Our U.S. operations improved saleable production by more than 61% quarter on quarter. At Curra, we were able to increase our productivity through better contractor management and performance, as well as improving throughput, reliability, and yield of our wash plants. In terms of revenue and costs, our revenue has gone up by 24% to $376 million. And that is on the back of better volume because met coal prices have come down by 6% quarter on quarter. Our mining costs have come down quarter on quarter from $57.3 per ton to $56 per ton, both year-to-date numbers to the end of September. We are not reporting profit in this quarter, but of course we like the combination of revenue up and cost down. In terms of liquidity, we have taken a few steps in the quarter to significantly improve our position. First up, we have implemented a capital management plan that reduced our planned FY20 capital expenditure by more than 40%. We successfully negotiated with our banking syndicate the covenant waiver extension until September next year, which gives us a bit more flexibility to navigate the current market conditions. And on the back of the waiver extension, we successfully raised $180 million new equity and paid down debt, which in turn reduced our net debt and gave us more liquidity and also improved our credit position. Look, I think we feel that we now have the right capital structure in place to manage our liquidity going forward. That includes a careful assessment of non-core asset divestments and other things on a business case basis. Back to you, Jerry.
As far as the markets go, let me just comment on the U.S. market. I'll ask Gerhard to comment on the broader Asian market. But in the U.S. market, the mating season is nearly done with the domestic producers. Prices will be down for domestic production next year, and it will depend upon a resurgence of the export market to restore some health to the metallurgical industry in the U.S. And there is some indication that the absent a reoccurrence of the pandemic, that economic activity in Europe and Brazil will justify an increase in exports from the current level in back up to more historic levels from the U.S. into Europe. Gerhard?
Thanks, Jerry. Look, let me give you an outlook how I see the market ex-US and, of course, China as the biggest steel market. I'll focus on this one and will also preempt questions you may have in terms of the so-called Australian coal import boycotts. China's economy actually keeps growing at more than 5% even during these difficult times, so it's really booming. That's also reflected in the steel markets. Steel is booming in the U.S. They produce now more than 1 billion tons in 2020, which is about 58% of global steel production. Just as an example, China crude steel demand actually went up 4%, nearly 4% year on year in August, which is another record. That's all underpinned by, you know, stimulus in the so-called old infrastructure segments, roads, bridges, rail, and also machinery production. Yes, there are rumors that China has banned Australian coal imports, and I have to emphasize that the situation around this is not 100% clear. Let me put some context around this. China imported 41 million tons seaborne coking coal in 2019. They have already hit this number in the first 8 months of 2020. Annualized, China will import 60 million tons of coking coal in 2020 based on these numbers till the end of August, which would be a 46% increase in coking coal imports year on year. And who benefits from this statistics most so far? Let's look at imports from Australia into China. In 2019, China imported 31 million tons coking coal from Australia. They already exceeded that number in the first 8 months to the end of August. On an annualized basis, China would import 53% more from Australia year on year. Mongolia coking coal exports into China fell victim to COVID earlier in the year. In 2019, Mongolia exported 34 million tons of coking coal into China. If we annualize now this number, Mongolia exports into China would not be more than 19 million tons, just under 19 million tons in 2020, or a 46% reduction year on year. What that shows me is that China may balance their import books a bit as part of their supplier management program and probably distribute a little bit more love to Mongolia, as these books are really unbalanced. What I hear is that our interpretation of the political messaging is rather seen as convenient. Nevertheless, in my view, in terms of politics, it would be good to maintain a positive dialogue between China and ourselves, as China is our biggest trading partner. Let's not forget that the arbitrage, that's an important point, between domestic and seaborne coking coal has widened to $50 per ton in recent weeks, which means Chinese steel producers are paying about $50 per ton more for domestic coal than Australian. That means steel margins reduce, which also means domestic steel mills in China do not like this situation. Look, in the end, my view is China steel mills or coke ovens run like high-performance engines that require high-octane fuel. You can run them for a short period on low-octane fuel, but soon these engines will break. Australia's low-vol, low-sulfur hard coking coal is, in this case, a high-octane fuel here. China, in my view, will come back at the end of this year or quarter one next year. There are other markets in China, and really, you look at India as the second biggest steel market. It's producing quite well, probably close to 2019 levels. I think the quarter four met coal imports into India will average about 4.5 million tons, which sits at about 90% of 2019 levels. And India is, for our Australian operations, the biggest export market. Strategically, that fits in quite well. India has increased crude steel production capacity from 110 million tons per annum to 142 million tons per annum in 2019. And I think over the next 10 years, that will go up to 300 million tons per annum. So India is by far the biggest growth market for coking coal. And other markets like Japan, Korea, Brazil, and Europe, we see a more moderate but also stable recovery of steel production. Steel producers are turning more blast furnaces on, which in turn will also mean that there's a high demand for steel and high demand for met coal. So I'll leave it here and open for Q&A.
Thank you. Just a quick reminder, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 2 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. The first question for today comes from Sam Webb from Credit Suisse. Sam, your line will be unmuted. Please go ahead now.
Thanks very much. Good quarter, guys. Just interested in what other levers you've got to reduce the current cash burn that's still taking place, and to the extent that you can comment, what sort of magnitude, you know, are we looking at here in terms of dollar millions? And then a follow-up to that is, how should we be thinking about CapEx for next year? So in the event that we're in a world where prices are still subdued, is 2020 CapEx how we should be thinking about next year, or is there an ability to step that down again potentially in 21? Thank you.
I won't make a detailed list of those assets which we have slated for sale. Some of the discussions are commercially sensitive, but we are approaching this on a fairly broad basis on non-strategic, non-core assets. That's frankly as far as I would want to go on that. As far as the capital for next year, we still believe we have room to focus on reduced capital. We're not going to starve the properties. We're not going to high grade. But frankly, I think something at or a little below what we've averaged as the base level capital requirement would be a reasonable expectation.
Thank you. The next question comes from Paul Young from Goldman Sachs. Paul, your line will be unmuted now.
Thank you. Morning, Jerry. Morning, Gerhard. Thanks for the call. A question on cash flow movements in the quarter. If I just look at, you know, EBITDA was about $10 million, CapEx about $20 million, yet net debt went up, I think, around $50 million. You've got some tax movements and interest payments, et cetera. But can you maybe just chat through the key drivers for that increase in net debt post the, I guess, the adjusted pro forma at the end of June, and maybe focus, maybe it's a question for Gerhard, just on working capital. You know, how much build did we see, and was that really around, if there was a build, around receivables into the end of the quarter? Thanks.
Let me address a couple of operating issues associated with working capital, and then I'll ask Gerhard to comment more completely. You would, of course, see an increase in operating in working capital simply because of the increase in production occur, and because you were selling out of inventory essentially a prepaid basis, a prepaid cash basis, for all of the second quarter. You started the mines up in the third quarter, and that would, of course, been an addition to working capital as well. Gerhard, do you want to add anything?
Yeah. Look, there's a significant chunk of working capital movement in there, and that's timing related. That's really, we had a good, you know, particularly in September, a good sales month on the back of record sale production performance and record sales. And of course, we collect these, and it was higher prices as well in September, and the collection happens in quarter four.
Yeah, okay, good. That's useful. So just on that, continuing on, so we should expect to see an unwind in receivables in the December quarter. And then also just on receivables, the ex-coal receivable, can you maybe just give us an update on what sort of unwind you've seen in that balance? Thanks.
We don't have an exact number for ex-coal. We'll not until the audit is complete. The only thing we can say is that there continue to be payments made on that receivable, and we expect it to be retired.
Okay, thanks, Jerry. But maybe just turning to coal prices and realizations and the market, can you maybe comment on what you're seeing in the lower rank coals at the moment that you sell, particularly PCI and semi-soft, in the quarter and at the moment? Are you getting, I guess, spot prices for PCI and semi-soft, and also on Buchanan exports, what sort of pricing are you seeing on Buchanan exports? Are we getting there a met coal price, or are we getting more a PCI price for that coal?
Gerhard?
Yeah, I just responded to the first one there on lower grade coals. Look, in the end, first of all, we are not impacted by the our supply chain is not impacted by the current situation. We are actually sold out, if you like, here in Australia, Australian coal, and I'll let Jerry comment on Buchanan. But as you can imagine, the coal price that is now reported, the premium lower hard coking coal index is now down to $114 per ton, 114, so that has an impact on all other prices as well. So although our supply chain is not impacted, and the U.S. is actually positively impacted, if anything, you know, we're going to feel that pain on a revenue basis going forward. Jerry, I'll let you comment on Buchanan.
Look, Buchanan principally goes to China. It is our largest sale to China. And it goes on rough parity with the HCC 64 price. I don't want to get into the commercial details of the pricing, but absent embargoes and absent special restrictions, it goes at rough parity to HCC 64.
Okay. That's useful. Okay, last question from me is just around your end customers and percentage split by region. There's been a lot of moving parts, of course, in the last 12 months with all the coal companies and where they sell their coal based on, you know, blast furnace utilization rates, et cetera. But as a snapshot, just round numbers, as it stands today, can you give us, you know, a sense of what percentage sales are going to which region at the moment?
About,
you want to give that a try, Gerhard?
Yeah, look, it's about 60% into Asia. I can tell you that not a lot of Australian coal goes into China. It's for the Australian coal probably the fourth or fifth largest market. When I talk Asia, India is our prime market, and then we have Japan, and then we have Korea. If you look at the U.S. coal, our prime market is, of course, for Logan, U.S. For Buchanan, the prime market is really export, and probably 80% of Buchanan goes into export, and 80% of that goes into China, and that's a positive because we don't see really a, you know, China is open to U.S. coal at this stage.
Okay. All right. Thank you, gentlemen. That's very useful. I'll pass it on to the next.
Glenn, sorry about that. The next call, the next question on the line is from Glyn Lawcock of UBS. Glyn, your line is open now.
All right. Thanks very much. Good morning, gents. Just two quick questions, if I could, really more just around the ops. You talked about Curra, where you've mobilised an additional fleet, which obviously helped you compensate for the weak first half. Is that permanent, or how long is that there for? So just trying to understand the steady state for Curra. And then second question really is about the US ops. I think I read you talked about operating at 60% of capacity in the quarter. I was just wondering how you've exited the quarter. Have you, you know, given how the market did improve, are you operating at a better rate than that now as you exited the September quarter for the US? Thanks.
Look, the issues about we're about to go into our budgeting process. Any questions about the number of fleets that remain at Curra gets into assessments on what kind of capital we spend and what kind of digging tools are dedicated to potential box cuts. So I'd like to defer that one until we are finished with our budgeting process, which is in underway right now.
Could I ask that, is that additional fleet though still on site though and running today though?
It is today.
Yep. Okay, thanks.
As far as the U.S. goes, and if you could repeat the U.S. the question.
Yeah, sorry, Jerry. I was just wondering I think you made the comment that you ran at 60% of capacity in the quarter. I'm just wondering what sort of capacity you were running at as you exited the September quarter. You know, have you picked up the capacity from that 60% average through the quarter?
We did at the very end of the quarter. Logan continues to run as it has, but Buchanan picked up.
Okay, that's great. Thanks.
Thank you, Glenn. Just a quick reminder to everyone, if you do wish to ask a question, please press star and then 2 on your phone. The next question comes from Mark Levin from The Benchmark Company. Mark, your line is now open.
Great. Thanks very much. So two quick questions. One, as it relates to cost, I think you referenced $56 and you had some pretty unusual circumstances in the quarter. Where, in a more normalized environment in which operations are sort of running the way you want to, what do you think is a reasonable, cost assumption? That's my first question. Then my second question, then I'll just listen, is maybe you have some commentary around the Indian market. Obviously, we're reading about China, but maybe you can talk about, the status of demand from your key Indian customers. Thanks.
As far as the Indian market goes, we continue to see improved appetite for coal imports into India. Their recovery program has been characterized as less well-funded than some others. And in India, there is tremendous dislocation among the productive components, and it's a harder situation to assess. Recently, Nomura and a few other banks have reduced their expectation for India, but it continues to increase its production of automobiles and other manufactured goods requiring steel. As far as the cost goes, again, I would not want to make a numerical assessment of where the cost might wind up. I think Gerhard and I both believe, as does Jim Campbell, that there is still room for improvement.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. The next question comes from Stuart Foster from Foster Stockbroking. Stuart, your line is now open.
Yeah, hi, thanks. Thanks. I just wanted to ask, you keep making these announcements on the shelf registration filing in the U.S. Can you just give us some color as to what's the plan with this?
We sort of missed it now. 20 there.
The shelf registration is, as it's implied, a standby status, so it will be utilized when and if we require it, or when and if it is beneficial. And I can make no predictions as to that.
Yeah, so this is to enable you to raise capital in the U.S., though, is it? Because you've got a shelf registration ready to go if you needed to. Is that sort of the purpose of it?
That is one of the options, exactly.
Yeah, okay. But at this stage, there's no intention to do that.
I couldn't comment on any immediate intention. The shelf registration speak for themselves, and we would have to initiate that, which we have not.
Okay, thanks so much.
Thank you, Stuart. As there are no further questions, I would like to throw it back to Jerry and Gerhard for closing comments.
Gerhard, do you have anything? Any final comments?
No, boss, I'll leave it up to you.
Look, I want to thank you for your attention and very much appreciate your participation in the call. Have a good day.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Jerry and Gerhard. That concludes our call for today. Thank you for joining.